This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
That's a lot of jobs that could be lost greening the global economy, but a slightly bigger number could be gained. I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning to you. For the first time, a Federal Reserve Bank will be led by a black woman. The Federal Reserve Bank of Boston has announced that economist Susan Collins will take over on July the 1st, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
The Federal Reserve has 12 regional Fed banks. The presidents of those banks are part of the Federal Open Market Committee, which sets interest rates. Collins will be a voting member of the FOMC this year. She'll be coming to the Fed from the University of Michigan, where she's an economist and administrator. In 2019, Collins told Yahoo News the Fed should raise its 2% inflation target, letting the economy run a little hotter for longer so companies can hire more people, lowering the unemployment rate. The Fed is expected to start raising rates this year to try to get inflation down to that 2% target. The Boston Fed describes Collins as an international macroeconomist with a lifelong interest in policy and its impact on living standards. She replaces Eric Rosengren. He resigned last year after disclosing he traded in real estate securities while the Fed was in the midst of trying to stimulate the economy during the pandemic. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
If you just flicked on the program in progress or in the other room at the top, this is Susan Collins, the economist, not Susan Collins, the Republican senator from Maine. Let's do the numbers. Stock index futures are mixed. For the Dow, up 0.1%. For the S&P, down 0.1%. NASDAQ futures are down 0.2%. In about 2 hours here, we'll get the report on consumer prices for January. Forecasters expect inflation to hit a new 40-year high, with prices up possibly 7.3% in a year, even if January's increase is a bit less than December's. We'll see. We're also following the big protests by truckers in Canada, delaying parts for cars and other U.S. factories. Marketplace Morning Report podcast, if you missed that on the air. At first resistant, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is now poised to push for a ban to keep members of Congress from trading individual stocks, an idea that has widespread public support. Pelosi's pushing an interesting angle now, saying yesterday she would want such a ban to go beyond Congress and apply government-wide. This would include the judicial branch, which would include the 9 justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. The UN climate panel has said that the world has to find a way to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. This to get to net zero CO2 by mid-century to stave off further catastrophe. Today, how big a change to the world economy would that be? Well, the McKinsey Global Institute has taken a crack at putting numbers to this. I spoke with the lead author of the report, Mekhala Krishnan, who's a partner at the Institute.
We will need to change how much we're spending towards the net zero transition. We will need to substantially scale up investment and spending on capital. We will see a transformation of jobs across the economy that affect sectors and geographies. We will see the nature of demand shift in a whole range of different sectors. And we will see potential implications on costs of different products and services. So almost every aspect of our economic lives is going to change as a result of the net zero transition.
Now, here's the McKinsey projection on jobs. Getting to net zero would generate 200 million jobs worldwide. The other side of the ledger, an estimated 185 million jobs would be lost. So fewer, but close.
Sectors that have high emissions, they contribute to CO2 and methane emissions today, could see a reduction of jobs. So this is sectors like oil, gas, coal production. It's sectors like fossil-based power. On the other hand, there's whole opportunities for jobs to be gained in sectors like renewable power, hydrogen, biofuels. So first and foremost, there is the reallocation of jobs that is concentrated in specific sectors of the economy.
Krishnan's team calculates the scale of this labor market disruption would be smaller than the dislocations caused by other powerful forces affecting jobs these days, such as the march of robots and artificial intelligence into the workforce. But getting to the place where carbon out is equivalent to carbon saved could have profound regional effects, depending on the local dominance of an industry or the geography. Here's one way to think about it. Ford Motor Company is building battery and EV plants in Kentucky and Tennessee that should create 14,000 jobs. But if you're one of the 14,000 or so coal miners over in West Virginia who risk losing work in this energy transition, the opportunity does not line up with the cost at the individual level.
I think there's two aspects that are really important to think about. The first is the fact that we need to think about worker transitions and reskilling, redeployment of jobs. The second is the fact that we need to create jobs in the communities where jobs could be most disrupted.
The McKinsey Institute has tried to put a price tag on all of this. Ready? $9.2 trillion around the world each year on physical infrastructure. We spend now about $5.7 trillion, so there's an additional $3.5 trillion per year. Then there's the politics of who pays.
I think there is a big question that the research has not explored, but I think one that the global community is now going to be faced with on who pays for the net zero transition. Some of the categories of spend that we analyze in the report do come with financial returns. Estimates would suggest anywhere from 40 to 50% of the spend does have a financial return. But there is a portion of the spend then that does not have returns, is not quote unquote in the money today. And so the question becomes, how do we drive capital towards the sectors and geographies where it's most needed, particularly when it does not come with a financial return?
The McKinsey Global Institute's report is called The Net Zero Transition, What It Would Cost, What It Could Bring. Now, if you have some extra earbud time later on, Krishnan makes some powerful points in the 13-minute cut of our conversation. It's streamable from marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.